It's time to take this game into overtime.
The official podcast
of the Average Joe's Sports Show
on 90.9 The Light Sports
for our generation.
Sit down, relax, and grab a cup of Joe, because it's time to talk sports.
Live from the campus of Liberty University and from the studios of 90.9 The Light,
it's the Average Joe Show.
The Average Joe Sports Show. Welcome to a special spring break, March Madness edition of the show here on this wonderful chilly Saturday here in the Hill City. I'm Joe Mixey, joined by Kyle Vaught. March Madness right around the corner. 5:30 tomorrow, and we'll find out when those brackets are going to drop. Kyle, we certainly have a lot to talk about with what's happened in the last couple of days. Yep. Won't mention our school, but plenty of other schools to talk about, that's for sure.
That is true. There's a lot of exciting basketball to be played left, and some that has already finished up.
Yeah, certainly is. And when you take a look at the brackets, a lot of those mid-major schools going to compete with some of the Power 5 schools that have 12, 13, 14 losses. We're going to break all that down. We're going to talk about who's already in, who's going to be in today as they have some finals. We still have about half the field in terms of automatic qualifiers to fill in. And then who's going to be able to sneak in? We'll break down the bubbles.
Yeah. But
we'll get started right now with who's already in, who is punching their ticket. And you take a look, you always got to look at those teams that get in for the first time. You love it. I mean, they storm their court, and that kind of carries them in with some momentum. So we'll start. We already have a handful of teams. Two first-time bidders that have never been in. That's from the Ohio Valley, Jacksonville State. The Gamecocks are going. And then out of the Horizon League, Northern Kentucky. So both of those teams will be making their appearance for the first time in the tournament. And then you have ETSU, Winthrop out of the Big South, Bucknell out of the Patriot, Mount St. Mary's, Texas Southern, Florida Gulf Coast, Gonzaga out of the West Coast, Iona out of the MAAC, South Dakota State, UNC Wilmington, and Wichita State. So really, you have two teams on this list that would have been in anyway. Those are Wichita State and Gonzaga. So those are just kind of a case of some early mid-majors that have already gotten in. You take a look at some of these teams with just very sloppy RPIs and very sloppy strength of schedule, teams that normally wouldn't be in, teams that'll be, 16 seeds like, South Dakota State, UNC Wilmington, Jacksonville State, Northern Kentucky, places like that. We've seen some upsets from teams like Winthrop before, from teams like Bucknell before.
Yeah.
But really not too much. I think you can't. You don't look into it too much, but congratulations to those teams,
Absolutely, congratulations to those teams. And you look at kind of like UNC Wilmington. They've been playing really, really well this probably the last month. Teams like Winthrop, who really were kind of the powerhouse in the Big South Conference this year. You never know what they're capable of.
Wilmington actually has an RPI of 27. Thanks to schedule, not too bad.
No, and, but I do know that they were pretty high on the points per game this regular season.
Yeah, well, so. Depends on who they're playing. They have a couple of sub-100 losses. You take a look at the ratings percentage index, and that's kind of how everything is rated here, the RPI. I don't really go too much into BPI. I'm not really a BPI person. RPI is what I stick with, strength of schedule, non-conference strength of schedule. That's what kind of can determine it all. And then we move on, you take a look at what's going to happen today, and there's certainly going to be a party in some of these courts. We have all these bids that are coming, everything from the ACC to the WAC. Between the next 2 days, you're going to have bids punched to the NCAA tournament. First one, I always got to give a little shout out here, America East. It always happens at 11 a.m. on the Saturday before, America East. So you have that one happening. The MEAC is at 1. Norfolk State going to take on NC Central. NC Central, the number one seed there, 24-8. And then Vermont and Albany out of the America East. Vermont should win that. Vermont and North Carolina Central, not really teams that will be in contention for a bid, just, because they don't play very tough schedules. They don't schedule very well. That's just kind of the way it is. For the first time ever, on Sunday, we're going to have the Ivy League championship game. Ivy League moving to a tournament style. I think that's great. Princeton actually could be one of those teams that maybe makes a case. They got a pretty high RPI, and they've been that team that other teams are relying on to win to boost their strength of schedule. They're in a semifinal today against Penn. You take a look at some other finals, and we'll get to all the semifinals that are happening today, including some big ones. At 5:30, we have the Big East men's final, number 2 Villanova. They got their 30th win. They're taking on a red-hot Creighton team.
Yeah, Creighton's on fire right now, too, and they've been playing pretty solid for the last month or so. They've got 2-star point guards that play really strong. We'll really see what Villanova can do if they're able to even get a chance to repeat, you know, as they lead up into this spot.
Then a half an hour after that, at 6 o'clock, you're going to have the Big 12 Men's Championship game presented by Phillips 66. Number 23, Iowa State, taking on number 11, West Virginia. Don't really think Iowa State was too much on the bubble, but making it to the final and advancing the way that they did, that certainly gets them out of the contention as a ranked team. You'll probably see them at maybe a 5 or a 6, depending on really how good they do. If you take a look at bracketology, we do rely on Joe Lunardi. I wouldn't call him a friend of the show or anything. I don't know him. I wish I did. He's a great guy, and I wish that I do try to make my own bracket, which I will be doing tomorrow. I try to break down all the RPIs and everything and try to do it myself, which is always a fun task, you know. You try to make it yourself, and I always end up putting in mid majors that get overshadowed by Power Five teams with 14 or 15 losses. But anyway, Iowa State sitting in there right now at a 6 seed, and then West Virginia, the number 11 team, had a fantastic season thus far. The Mountain West Championship at 6 o'clock, Colorado State taking on Nevada. Nevada coming in at 27-6, so this is a team that could possibly try to steal a spot if they were to lose to Colorado State. I really hope they don't, because I to be honest, this year you don't want to see two Mountain West teams in. It was just not good this year for Nevada thus far. But
I mean, they haven't really played anybody this last month or so. No. Since I mean, they are on a very hot win streak since February 15th, defeating Air Force at Air Force. But since then, I mean, the best team that they've beat is UNLV.
Well, you take a look at their non-conference schedule. They didn't really have any. The toughest opponent they faced all year was St. Mary's in their first game, and they lost by almost 20 points to the Gales there. So for a team like Nevada, you don't schedule a good non-conference, and that's not really going to help you in a conference like the Mountain West that has completely just been irrelevant since you had teams like BYU step aside that were really kind of running that conference. Boise State gets in there every couple of years, but we don't see them this year. And that's really that. I mean, it's just irrelevant. Oh, and San Diego State, I should say. Also, another team that can come in and they'll grab a 3-4-5 seed. You know, they've had that coach of theirs that they had was, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but a very, very decorated franchise there for San Diego State, but really don't see them either. Move on to the SWAC tournament, if you're following that. 6:15, Alcorn State and Texas Southern, another just automatic qualifier. The MAC, Akron and Kent State. Akron coming in at 26-7, and another team that could make a case for a bubble seed if they were to lose to Kent State. But you really hope that doesn't happen, because you have plenty of other teams in contention. Big Sky, Weber State, and North Dakota, I should say. And then Middle Tennessee and Marshall. So Middle Tennessee is a team that absolutely would be in there on the bubble if they're not able to win this game for the CUSA. You take a look at what they have done this year,
and it's been really exciting to watch, too, because coming off, of course, last year, we had that crazy, you know, round matchup where MTSU was able to take down, you know, Michigan State, and they shot through the roof, you know, threes. And then to come back this season and have what and be able to do what they're doing, I mean, I don't think they've lost since, you know, maybe the first week in February.
Yeah, coming in at 27-4.
Yeah. I mean, they've played phenomenally, you know, this season. Still really, really strong. Good three-point percentage, good movement. They've got one good defensive player that I think is in the top 25 blocks in the nation. So things like that, it's going to affect the tournament once they get in, if they get in.
Yeah, so assuming that they do win this, Joe Lunardi has them at an 11 seed, which would be on the bubble anyway at 29-4. I think I just said 27-4, but 29-4, 17-1 in the conference. with an RPI of 38, a strength of schedule of 162. You can put that behind you a little bit. They had a couple of top 50 wins against UNC Wilmington, a team that's already in the tournament, and Vanderbilt, a team that is just soaring high after beating Florida. We'll talk about that in a little bit. They had three sub 100 losses, including one to UTEP, 241. That does not look good. Their defining win, you would really say, is Vanderbilt. You put them against the rest of the field, and I think that they would be compared to a team like Illinois State out of the Missouri Valley that ended up losing to Wichita in the final and was not able to get in. So they're right on the bubble. Joe Lunardi actually has them as the, I think, the second team out right now.
Yeah.
So that's...
It would be difficult. I mean, they're shooting really well. They're number 14 in the nation on shooting percentage. They're right at 0.544. Yeah, which isn't that bad. They've played really well. It's going to really come down to how they're able to, who they match up against. If they match up against somebody good, then they may not, you know, make it far. But
we'll take a look at the bubble in a little bit. We'll take a look at Illinois State in a little bit. But I do think, and you have to be mentioning this, if you're listening here and you're saying, you know, what is March Madness? How is this all done? Yeah. Well, you have 68 teams that get in. You have, off the top of my head, is it 36 automatic qualifiers from each conference? It might be 37 now that the Ivy League's.
Yeah, it may be 37.
I don't know.
Now.
It's something mid-30s.
They have the random bid.
And then you have the bubble seeds. So it's kind of based on how good your schedule is and the selection committee, which likes to tick a lot of people off. And I think when I was doing this as a younger college basketball enthusiast, you know, in my lack of wisdom, like Paul says there, you know, when I was a child, I walked like a child, I thought like a child, I bracketed like a child. So, you know, I would go, oh yeah, you know, this team only has four or five losses, you know, but they have four or five losses to like an RPI team of, you know, 400. It doesn't really matter. And you have a couple of cases like that this year. One of them, for the second year in a row, is absolutely just going to be fried in a pan by the selection committee, unfortunately. But you just got to get the work done, and you got to win your conference sometimes. That's the way it is, or you go get another one like Liberty. So, yeah. I mean, you just got to do the work. So when it comes down, the selection committee likes to pick teams that might have 13 losses, but they've beaten six or seven teams in the RPI top 50. So you have right now, I believe there's seven teams that are lined up in the Big East, in the Big Ten, and 10 in the ACC, which is pretty ridiculous. And you could even have more. Right now, on Joe Lunardi's bubble, all four teams in his last four byes are from the Big East. Two of his teams in his last four in are from the ACC. And then he doesn't have his last four out. He just has two of them posted right now. But those are both teams from mid-major conferences that are probably going to be irrelevant. One of them has a chance to win their conference tournament. If they do that, it actually could put another team on the bubble, which that's for somebody.
See,
it's like,
it literally is, you know, like throwing about 25 basketball teams into a blender, turning it on.
Oh, it certainly is.
And then hoping that the flavors come out enough. Or even better yet, it literally is a lottery, you know, one of those little ball things, you know, you watch them. Is it my number? Is it my number? And you never know
that.
What you're going to get.
It's interesting how much a loss in, you know, November or December might affect you here in March. And then a late loss could really cripple you. So let's keep taking a look at the games tonight. After yesterday, I'm sure we're all going to want to watch the ACC Men's Tournament Final. 14 Duke taking on Notre Dame, the number 22 ranked team in the country. They were able to slip in last night to the final in a late night matchup there. So Duke and Notre Dame, kind of break this down, Kyle. Is this the Duke team that Duke fans have been waiting for, the team that beat North Carolina last night, or can you credit that to kind of chemistry? But I think everybody's looking at what Luke Kennard can do, not necessarily somebody like Grayson Allen, but Luke Kennard, he's been, you know, kind of on the chopping block, and they're saying, you know, he's the guy for Duke heading into the tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do. And, of course, everybody knows the name Grayson Allen. I think he's, at this point, infamously known for everything that he's done, but
being a sloppy player.
Yeah, well, sloppy, dirty.
Yeah.
It really is going to, you know, it depends on how you want to look at it. But it is Coach K, and the way that he coaches his team is always been very consistent. He's not changed a lot of the way that he coaches through the years. He just is very consistent. And I think that's going to help. The main issue is Kennard going to be able to lead the team past the point of his abilities? Are they going to rally around him? Are they going to help him score? Are they going to help him be able to get those shots? Or is it going to be Grayson Allen? Is Grayson Allen going to want to take that lead? Is he going to want to take those shots? And I think last night you saw something that they didn't do well, you know, through all of the season. You know, they had some of those weird, you know, losses throughout the season because I think it came down to Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard and whether or not they were able to play with each other in sync, or if you had issues where they just weren't in sync. And that could be coaching, that could be, I don't know, maybe Coach K has just figured out the formula at this point and that's why last night they played so well. Or it could be that it was just a really hot night for everybody last night on Duke's team, and this could be one of those things that you look back on and say, whoa, maybe they weren't as good as we thought. So,
well, you take a look at what happened last time these two teams played. They played once this year. Number 21 at the time, Duke upset number 20, Notre Dame, 84-74. If you want to call it an upset, it's Duke. I mean, so Kennard had 16 points. Grayson Allen led all teams with 21. And then Jason Tatum had 19. So you had four players in double digits for Duke. They really don't have bench support. I mean, you don't need it if you have a starting five like Duke does. It's right. Not really like you're throwing people in and out of the mix. For Notre Dame, they're going to need some help. VJ Beachum led them with 20 points. Steve Vesturia only had 7, and then Bonzi Colson had 17. But for Colson and Vesturia, they were the ones that kind of propelled them over number 16, Florida State, last night. So you kind of look for them to do that again. Do you think that's the key, is just scoring by association for Notre Dame? Or do you think their defense needs to kick in and try to work on a guy like Luke Kennard?
Well, as a team, they are only averaging about 78 points a game. They are winning rebound battles probably the most, so that's going to help them, especially with Duke's size. Duke is not necessarily like your, you know, major, you know, higher or taller teams. But again, we're looking at Notre Dame, who has struggled through the season. We've seen them struggle against, you know, not heavy teams, not high teams. We've also seen them play solid against a lot better teams. I mean, we saw them lose to FSU early on in the season, and then they came back and they beat FSU later on in the season. So that's kind of that hope that, you know, as they're able to move forward, they may be able to hang with Duke. The thing that I'm probably most worried about is they don't always play, I would say they don't always play able to move through the paint and then get those points from down low the way other teams are. They have a lot of rebounds, they have a lot of movement, but they don't always get those paint points and steady up the way that other teams are able to do, especially in tournaments.
And it's really that ACC parity too. We already said 10 teams are scheduled by Joe Lunardi to be in the field, and they just beat up on each other. So you have those teams on the lower side, but they still, we saw what happened last year with a team that I don't want to mention their name now because I'm going to devote lots of time for them after we take a break.
Okay.
So you look at that to happen again, but then you look is not only how good are the bottom teams that have been beaten up, but how good are the teams at the top? And we get to see a couple of those in Notre Dame and Duke tonight at 9 o'clock on ESPN. 9:30, Texas A&M Corpus Christi in New Orleans in the Southland Final. Winner of that will get an automatic seed there. Then we have the Pac-12, and that's certainly been interesting, especially after what happened last night. You have Arizona upsetting UCLA. They'll take on Oregon today. So can Arizona make a case for, I don't know necessarily know if they're making a case, make a case for a one seed. Gonzaga already won their tournament. Kansas out very early in the second round.
That was shocking.
North Carolina out in the semifinals, and Villanova in their finals. Does Arizona have a chance to slip in there for a one seed? Or does Oregon, because they're playing each other, and right now Lunardi has them as the number 3 and the number 4 two seeds behind Kentucky and Duke. So Kentucky's still in. Duke, obviously we just talked about them. They're going to play. So you kind of take a look at Duke, Kentucky, Arizona, and Oregon as in contention for maybe a one seed that Kansas might give up, or have they done enough as the number one team?
Well, I think Arizona's going to get in as the number one. I'm just looking at some of the numbers. Arizona has played solid. They've had, I think, all three, Oregon, Arizona, and UCLA, tied at 29-4 at the end of this season. So they're all really good. The issue that I see is Oregon had a very odd loss early on to Georgetown, which at the time everybody thought maybe this was going to be a really strong, you know, phenomenal
They haven't watched Big East basketball in the last 20 years.
Right, but at this, I mean, they had another loss to Colorado.
I will never pick Georgetown to go to the Sweet 16 ever again.
Yeah, ever again.
And probably not Michigan State at this point either.
You know, that is something that we could talk about for a while, because Tom Izzo everything that's gone on over the last, I would say, what, 2.5-3 years?
Yeah.
It feels just weird. And then we look at the players, you know, that have come out of there, and they're just not doing much at all at the next level. But back to the basketball in Arizona, what they're doing is very strong and very quick. I do think that they're going to get the first seed because of their defense more than their offense. They do a pretty good job of keeping lower in the 70s. You know, there's only been a few teams that have scored a little bit more than that throughout the season. In fact, they've held some teams to in the 50s. I mean, they held ASU and UCLA. They held UCLA to 85 points last time they played.
Well,
in the regular season.
Let me stop you there, because I do think Arizona has a polished resume, and so does Oregon. They're number five right now, so they'd probably more so even be on the case there, even though Arizona just had a quality win against UCLA, possibly one of the top contenders for the championship. But that being said, do we really want to put Kansas in a coffin and say, you know, we'll ship you off to a number two seed in the Midwest? Here's why you don't necessarily want to do that. That was just their fourth loss of the year. They have the second-rated RPI and the 33rd best strength of schedule. They beat Kentucky. They beat Baylor twice, and those are very, very good quality wins. Their worst loss of the year was to a team with 81 RPI, Indiana. Right now, TCU, they're sitting at a high 70 RPI, so like around 78, 79 right now. So that's not necessarily a terrible loss, even though it was to an 18-14 TCU team. So, and it's a conference opponent, and it's in championship week. It was bad.
But
in the second round there, it was bad.
There's always teams that do this, at this point. So I don't think it should hurt them as much as it just should say,
I don't think it's going to hurt Kansas. I think you're just going to have an instance where you're going to have eight teams in Villanova, North Carolina, Gonzaga, Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, Arizona, Oregon, and I'll throw UCLA in there because they just got beat. They're sitting back there at a 3, maybe Baylor. But I'm talking about elite squads, Louisville as well, possibly. Elite squads
possibly.
that are legitimate contenders, like you throw them all their balls in the cage and you roll it up for the championship, and just like power heavyweights. And to have that many teams be in that contention is certainly something that you really want to see. And I think that that's great. I think that that's certainly going to be something that's going to make college basketball great. I think this year it might be tougher for some of those. I think there's a greater separation. There's a greater separation in these mid-major Cinderella teams than some of these heavier teams, just by the way that they've played this year, by their personnel, and ultimately by their conference makeup as well. You have that in the ACC and in some of the other conferences as well. So wrapping things up, if you're up late tonight, you can watch the WAC final between New Mexico State and CSU Bakersfield, who clinched their first bid last year ever to the tournament. And then at 11:30, UC Davis and UC Irvine. So that's it for the finals today. Also have some good semifinal action in the American Conference, in the SEC, in the A-10, and also in the Ivy League, and the Sun Belt has it as well. So, and we'll talk about some of that, because we're going to talk about bubble teams right after the break here. Make sure you keep it locked to the special March Madness edition of the Average Joe's Sports Show here on 90.9 The Light.
So you're watching TV when a show about the environment comes on. You know, air pollution and greenhouse gases. You get all conflicted because it's important, but you don't know how to help. You can be part of the solution. The fact is, your home can cause twice the greenhouse gases of your car. It's true. That's why the EPA urges you to make your home more energy efficient with Energy Star to help in the fight against air pollution. Discover steps you can take to reduce air pollution from your home and car at EnergyStar.gov, and you'll know you're making a difference.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
What did you do last night?
I was cooking with Jennifer. She's the young girl I'm mentoring.
I could never do that.
You absolutely could. I'm just her friend.
I don't know what we talk about.
You'd be surprised how much you can help a young person just by listening and hanging out together.
Go to mentoryouth.com to find opportunities near you or call 1-877-500-MENTOR because they need what you know.
Talking about March Madness on the show here today. March.
March.
It's March Madness. The point I was going to make now, I guess I was thinking, you know, two steps ahead before my mouth, was talking about March Madness, and we have snow coming on the ground. So yesterday, I walk into softball to announce softball. Big Liberty Softball Classic going on.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, 60 degrees when I walked in. Walk out, you know, it's a casual, like, I don't know,
what is
40,
it, 45?
And then I
44?
Take, you know, Thomas Pinciero's fiance to the airport today at 5 in the morning because I'm such a saint.
It's like 29
and it's like,
degrees.
Yeah, exactly. It's like 29 degrees. So right now it's a crisp, I don't know, 35 degrees out. And then we're going to have snow. We're going to have the snowpocalypse on Tuesday. So we'll see what happens with that.
Because, you know, everybody wants snow near springtime.
I'm going to take my super minivan to Ohio. So we'll see how that goes. And yeah, so if I don't make it back, this might be, this could be my last show. So I hope this one was a good one.
No, no.
We'll talk about it though. But yeah, so you talk about bubble teams. Are they going to be good enough to get in to the tournament? And there's a whole lot to talk about. This is really where I like breaking things down because you take a look at each team individually, what they have done, what they haven't done, and you're able to break them down. So I make a bubble watch sheet where I take a look at some of these teams.
I forget how much. You told me how much you work on your brackets
well,
and how
I,
much you
I
love
used to
this.
Do it a lot more. But the last couple of years, I've actually hosted a bracket challenge when I was living on the dorms.
Oh, wow.
And that was always fun. So
that's impressive.
Yeah, so I'll break it down. The easiest way to kind of do it is to take a look at things by conference and you know what teams could possibly make it in. So we'll start with the American because we like to start alphabetically. So we go with the A. So you take a look at the American. This is kind of a conference. Last year they really didn't do much. You take a look at just exactly what happened last year. They had four teams in. They were 1-4 with UConn, the eventual tournament champion, taking the only win as a 9 seed against a number 8 team in Colorado State, or I believe it was Colorado. So, and then they were able to lose to Kansas there. So, really not much going on for the AAC. I don't think anybody would debate me in saying that they're not a very tough conference. You talked about UConn trying to move back to the Big East, possibly. I think that would be a great deal. Now, they're already getting their Tookus beat around in the American League, so that's not going to help them too much unless they get some other players. But right now they are in the American semifinal. So you take a look at some teams that you could have in contention. Houston, Central Florida, Memphis. Actually had UCF on here twice. So Houston, Central Florida, and Memphis, and UConn. So Cincinnati and SMU already in. They've had great years. Cincinnati able to defeat Tulsa. yesterday in the quarterfinal, and then SMU taking down East Carolina. Those are pretty easy matchups. They're going to be in. SMU 12, Cincinnati 15. Nobody's debating that. Houston loses in the ACC quarterfinal. Only two top 50 RPI wins. They will be out. UCF nowhere near, although they are still in. They beat Memphis by 30 yesterday. So Memphis, because of that, Memphis really wasn't in contention anyway. They have an RPI of 110. So you could take a look at also RPI. So really, kind of in your head, hypothetically, if you really wanted to, you say, you know, how high is too high of an RPI? Well, there's 68 teams in the tournament.
Right.
You're going to have those automatic qualifiers that are going to have RPIs way over 68. So really something around a 70-something of RPIs that have – now, it doesn't always happen that way. You had a team in SMU a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember this. They were ranked 24th in the country. They lost in the first round of their tournament, and they actually missed out on the tournament. They had a – I don't remember off the top of my head. It was probably a mid-50 RPI, and they were excluded from the tournament.
So I don't remember what year that was.
It was 1 or 2 or 3 years ago. Either one of those.
All right, that covers.
I'm really using it off the top of my head right now. But you do have that happen, and then you have teams sometimes with slightly higher RPIs get in, and those will be teams from conferences like the ACC. So UCF and UConn, two teams that are still in contention in the AAC for a possible bubble seed. It's not really going to be a bubble seed, because for UConn, they have to, if they beat Cincinnati today, they play Cincinnati at 5 o'clock. UCF will play SMU at 3 o'clock. If they both lose, you can close up the books on that. There'll be two AAC teams, and that's the way we'll go to the tournament. If one of them wins, you could make the case. But if UConn wins, they still need to beat whoever in the final. They will not make it. Not, no way. Not with the resume that they've had. They've had a terrible year. They have, and I'll get the number on it specifically, I believe it is 3 sub-100 RPI losses and 2 sub-200 RPI losses or something of that sort. But it has certainly not been a walk in the park for the University of Connecticut. They went 500 on the year. Jalen Adams and Rodney Purvis are really the only reason that they're still anywhere right now. And then for UCF, they're a team that, again, needs some help, and they'll be taking on SMU.
Which, if UCF is able to take down SMU, there could be an argument, but not a.
Not too much of an argument. An RPI of 74, a non-conference strength of schedule of 232, and you look at non-conference. That's important too, because conference games are games you're going to play.
Right.
I don't want to say they're handed to you, but you're playing them. Okay. So if you're the worst team in the Big 12, you're still going to play Kansas and all the Texas teams. And all the Oklahoma teams, you're still going to play them. Whether you stink and you didn't schedule them, you know, you're still going to play them. So non-conference strength of schedule is pretty important. I would say in the AAC, it's even more so important, because you never know if those teams like Cincinnati and SMU or Memphis or Tulsa or UConn are going to be heavyweights, and a couple of them this year weren't. So I would say that both of these teams, UConn and UCF, would have to win out in order to make it. I don't think anyone's going to debate that. I think UConn, and this always happens with UConn, and people do it for Syracuse, they're going to do it for UConn, and I won't argue with that. I appreciate that. But I think they're one of those teams that even if they win, they're still on your next four out.
Probably.
So they're on your next eight out, really. UCF is a team that has a little bit more of a repertoire, 21-10. On the season, and like we said, RPI of 79. They did have a quality win over Cincinnati this year. They had 5 losses over 100 RPI. Their worst one was 198 to Penn. UConn has that beat by a mile. They lost to Wagner. So that for UCF, I think they get a little bit closer. They could be possibly on your, you know, if UConn's the 8th team out, UCF could be the 6th. But really, I think that you take a look at the AAC, and that's what you have. So we move on to the A-10. And I like breaking it down this way, because you can kind of go from conference to conference and take a look at it. And then when you're done, you can put it all together.
Yeah, it's just puzzle pieces after that.
So for the America 10, that's not what they're called.
Atlantic?
I don't know. I don't know why I started to say Atlantic East.
Atlantic 10.
The A-10. You have two teams in Rhode Island and VCU that are on the bubble. VCU, I believe, is already safely in the bracket. And this is what, yeah, so VCU, they have been a 9 seed. That really shouldn't be contended. Coming in at 25-7, and they've been in and out of the top 25 this year. They have an RPI of 23, strength of schedule 63, a pair of top 50 wins. One of them, Middle Tennessee, is non-conference. They lost to Fordham, but the fact that they won yesterday and they're in their semifinal, I think they're going to be A-OK. You also have a team in Richmond that you can make a case for. Didn't include them in my research, but you could throw them up here off the top of your head. 20-11, 13-5 conference record, no dominant non-conference wins. They lost to Wake Forest. They lost to Maryland. At least they scheduled decent, which certainly could help them in the long run. They also lost to Texas Tech. They also lost to Bucknell. And they lost to ODU.
Yeah.
So that's kind of wonky there. Now,
wonky.
Rhode Island.
I like that.
You can make a case for Rhode Island, the Rams, who were ranked 21st coming into this year, which I thought absolutely was crazy for even the team that I almost went to their school. And I was, you know, very high on Rhode Island because I'm from Rhode Island and was born 25 minutes from the school. So that certainly helps. Right now they sit at an RPI of 45 and an SOS of 53. So that's a very good sitting right there. That's a middling scale. They do have some losses that have hurt them. They have a pair of top 50 wins, including one against Cincinnati. They have a pair of sub-100 losses. They beat St. Bonaventure yesterday in the quarterfinals. They have Davidson today. So I think that Rhode Island is competing against the field. They're not necessarily competing against themselves. But a win would do nothing more but help them. They have a legitimate chance because you already have Dayton, who was knocked out by Davidson yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's huge in the sense that Dayton moves down. They're still in. They're not necessarily on the bubble. That was the number one seed, though. So you have Rhode Island and a team that is very capable of taking down a 17-14 Davidson team. They're going to compete up against either a surging Richmond team or a steady, consistent VCU team. I think if they lose close to VCU, it's going to be tough for them. If VCU loses, they might go... If VCU loses, they see, if Rhode Island wins and VCU ends up losing, they both could get in. Rhode Island's going to get in if they win. But you do have a instance where another team might be knocked out.
Yeah, Syracuse. But yeah, I mean, in that situation, yeah, it would be Syracuse.
I hope
you just don't
can
like.
Only hope
you just don't like Syracuse.
Oh, there's reasons.
Oh, I'm intrigued by this reason.
Well, we'll talk about it in a second.
Okay, I mean, but if we're looking at the A-10 and you've got Dayton, VCU, and Rhode Island, Richmond is also pretty good. I mean, so that could affect. Whether or not if somebody loses to them, that could affect if somebody, you know, wins to them. That I think that helps them, you know, if anything. So you've got these teams that could set up. I'm interested to see what happens with Davidson today, you know, and how that turns out.
Well, right now, Richmond, and you put it into perspective with the RPI tracker, they're not in it. 79 RPI, strength of schedule 113. Their only quality win is against Rhode Island. And they have five sub-100 losses. So Richmond's not in it. Richmond, a win over VCU would not help them, unfortunately.
No, not them. But
it would hurt VCU,
but it wouldn't help them. Yeah, that's what I mean. Is no. It would affect the top three
teams.
They're
just a team that's blowing some hot steam right now. The team really to take a look at is Rhode Island, though. Do they have enough to do it? Ultimately, here's the deal with Rhode Island. You're supposed to beat Davidson. And then you have to face up either against a Richmond team that's not in it or a VCU team that is on the bubble of the bubble. I mean, they're a 9 seed right now. So, but this is a team that's competing against the likes of pretty much the rest of the ACC schools that are on the bubble and the Big East and one team from the Big 12.
Right.
And one team from the Pac-12 and Illinois State. Which right now Joe Lunardi says they have beat out. But they're just an example of a mid-major school that's going to be moved out. If they lose today, they're done. You can eliminate Rhode Island, and that was a good run. They'll be 22-10, and they'll probably still have a decent RPI. I don't think that the selection committee looks at the A-10 as a bolstering conference, and I know that they don't because of what they've done in the past. They look at other ones like the ACC. And we can move on to the ACC now.
Woo!
Because that's where we're at. So certainly a lot to talk about. We already talked about the final today going on with the ACC.
Duke, Notre Dame. Do you think anything changes regardless of who wins that game? Do you think any, like, heavy seeding changes or...
Well, that's really where you get into it where... well, Duke was moved up. I think Duke was... A couple of weeks ago, you had him at a 4 or 5, to be honest, with what was happening.
Now they're all the way at a what, 2?
Well, they're at a 2. They moved up from a 3 after they beat North Carolina. Can they move up to a 1?
I don't think
considering the fact that they're playing a ranked team, Gonzaga's locked in at a 1. Villanova should be locked in at a 1. Kansas was already a team that was above the pack even when they lost. North Carolina. So there you have a situation where... Nah, it's tough. You could have Duke beat out North Carolina 4-1. North Carolina thinks they already have it locked up because they have a better resume. They really do. They have a better resume. And that was they had already split a series with Duke, and Duke got them in the and you can't hold that against them. That's a non-scheduled matchup. Yeah. So I'd say put them in a 2.
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath on Duke being a 1. For Notre Dame, if they're able to win that game, they're a team that could possibly move up. Yeah, I would give them that. Let me find them here. Notre Dame a 4. They've already moved up. And they're with Purdue, a team that dipped out pretty early. West Virginia's in their final. And Butler has already been eliminated by Xavier, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
So you could have Notre Dame possibly move up to a 3. I think you keep them there at a 4. Just because of, like I was talking about before, the separation of powers here. So, yeah. So, we'll move into the rest of the ACC. So, you have bubble teams. These teams you could bring into contention. Miami, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Wake Forest, and Clemson. Now, one of them, before talking about them, we can eliminate them immediately, and that is? Do you know?
Clemson?
Yes, that's Clemson.
So
Clemson's
say,
done. So, I mean,
it's like, wait, I'm confused on what's happening.
I would like to talk about Clemson, but you can't talk about Clemson. There was one of those teams that was in the second round, or the first round, rather. They knocked out NC State, big whoop. That doesn't mean anything this year. Then they go to the second round, and they go, here's Duke. Well, maybe if we beat Duke, we can make a case for a bubble. Well, they couldn't do that. They're 17-15. They finished 6-12 in their conference. Even for the ACC, 6-12 is a bad record. Good night. Have a nice day, Clemson. We'll see you next year. That's what it is. So just for kicks and giggles, I believe I do have them on my sheet. Yep. So they had an RPI of 63. A nice strength of schedule in 32. They swept Wake Forest and took down South Carolina, but they lost to Georgia Tech and they lost to Oklahoma, which who thought a loss to Oklahoma would be as bad as it was this year? Holy moly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, you can shut the door on Clemson. Sorry, Clemson fans. Sorry, Chris Madden. That's the way it is. So, moving up next. So, you take a look at the second round, and who do we find? We find Syracuse. Yay, Syracuse. They made the Final Four last year. They weren't in my last four in, and I, you know, Twitter ranted about it and everything. And then they made it, and I was completely wrong. And then they made the Final Four, and I was really more wrong. Can they do that this year? Absolutely not. Should they be in the tournament this year? Absolutely not. Because they lost in the second round again. They lost to a team in Miami that's trying to fend for themselves on the bubble or just inside the bubble, you should say. They should be safely in. But Syracuse, RPI of 84. That's very high. I did not bring up last year's RPI for Syracuse. Let me see if I can find that off the top of my head. Just the RPI that they got in with.
And while you look up that, I mean, just running through Syracuse's regular season games that they played, they really don't really have a leg to stand on to make it. They had too many losses to a Georgetown, Connecticut.
Yeah, and they had the same thing
South
last
Carolina,
year.
South Carolina, you know, was – one of those weird games. Wisconsin was at least ranked when they lost to that. But who loses to SJU or, you know, Boston College in their situation?
Yeah, the Boston College one is inexcusable. But the problem is Syracuse goes, oh, look at our wins. Look at our wins. We beat Duke. Look at our wins.
I mean,
you know?
But
and
I
they
mean,
do that every single year. They did it. Listen, last year, they beat Duke.
I think, honestly, their strongest win was probably Miami. When they beat Miami 70-55, I mean that wasn't too long before, and Miami's played, you know, freak good games every once in a while, so I think that's probably their
Their strongest wins are going to be Florida State. They beat Florida State, Duke, and Virginia, and those are very strong wins.
Well, yeah, those are very strong wins.
Virginia
and Florida State, yes,
and
I
Duke.
Didn't see
that's
them.
A strong win.
I needed to scroll down.
That's absolutely a strong win, and I'm not disagreeing with that. Here's what I'm saying, and this just is music to my eyes. That's not an expression, but, you know, it's a delight. Last year, they get in with a record of 19-13. They lose in the second round of the ACC tournament. They had an RPI of 68 and a strength of schedule of 39. They had five top 100 wins, and they also had five top 100 or sub 100 losses, or top 50 wins, I should say. They lost to Connecticut, Georgetown, St. John's, Georgia Tech, and Boston College last year. This year, it's just more of the same. It's just some sloppy playing, okay? 18-14, an RPI of 84. That is just skyrocketing high. A strength of schedule of 62. That's even worse. They still have five top 50 wins, but again, you're in the ACC. You're still playing these teams. So they beat Duke. They beat Virginia. They beat Wake Forest, which actually means a good amount this year. They beat Miami, and they beat Florida State. But who do they lose to? Like you said, five again, and almost identical to last year. Connecticut, Georgetown, St. John's, Georgia Tech, and Boston College. It's the same thing, only with a lower RPI and a lower strength of schedule. And they lose to Miami again, and Miami's a team that is just safely in the bubble. And I believe they might have also lost. Oh, no. You know what? It was to Pittsburgh last year. Last year they lost to Pittsburgh in the second round. It wasn't to Miami. But I don't see how you can make a case. The case for them is they have a decent strength of schedule. Their non-conference strength of schedule is 216, which in the ACC non-conference strength of schedule doesn't matter too much because your conference is so good that you could schedule Liberty all day and nobody would care because your conference is so good. So their last 12, they're 7-5. Are they playing right now like a team you want to see play in the tournament? No. Do I think that the selection committee is going to really mull them over and make a last-minute decision about Syracuse, whether they should be in? Yes. Are there going to be some really annoying people in the selection committee that are really going to try to push hard for them to be in over a team like Rhode Island and Illinois State? Absolutely. But do I have them in? No. I would have a team like Wake Forest over them in a heartbeat, and here's why. Now, Syracuse has a 10-8 conference record. Wake Forest finished with a 9-9. They had a strength of schedule of 23 and an RPI of 31, which included beating Louisville, Miami, and Virginia Tech. So Syracuse beat Florida State, Duke, Virginia. Wake Forest beat Louisville, Miami, Virginia Tech. So that's more impressive on Syracuse's part because you have more top teams. But Louisville, definitely not a slouch. But their lowest loss, Wake Forest, was to Syracuse. At the time, Syracuse had an RPI of 75. Syracuse's lowest loss is 212. Now, I know you can't compare apples to oranges like that, but that's a very, very tough strength of schedule. Wake Forest also loses in the second round, and you can go, well, Joe, Mr. Average Joe over here, why aren't you berating Wake Forest for losing in the second round like you did Syracuse? Well, Syracuse has a better strength of schedule, and we'll pull up their numbers specifically. They've played better. They've played harder. They also lost to a better team in Virginia Tech, and you don't necessarily pick those. Miami, Virginia Tech, that's definitely a debate you could have as well. But that being said, why am I not being harder on Wake Forest is because they are a team, I would say, with less opportunities and more heart. They do have three top 50 wins. Those were their only, so Syracuse had five. But even though they had a lot of losses, they took them all in the top bracket. And their non-conference strength of schedule was not a 230, whatever I said. It was a 14. a 14. So even outside of the ACC, they're going out and they're playing tough teams. And that makes a world of a difference for Wake Forest. Their lowest losses, they lost a pair to Clemson, and then they lost to Syracuse. And that's it.
That's all you need. I don't think that they...
They got to be in. They got to be in.
I don't think that they are in a situation where it's like, oh, there's no way that they can get out.
He has them in as a... He has Syracuse and Wake Forest in at the last four in.
I think Wake Forest, though, you know, like you also said it, I think Wake Forest probably makes a better argument than Syracuse.
I'm arguing for Wake Forest over Syracuse. And you're saying, well, why are you doing that? They're both in. Here's why. You can take a look, and we'll speed this up a little bit. Some of these other teams, like Rhode Island, if they win today, Illinois State, who is already out. And then you have some cases for some teams that lost but made some interesting cases. So let's take a look at those. Number one, Kansas State. So Oklahoma State should be in. They lost in the quarterfinal. They had a strength of schedule of 11, non-conference RPI 29, just one sub-100 loss. They're already in the field. Kansas State, he has them in at their last four in as well. RPI 55, strength of schedule 50, four top 50 wins. That's a pretty good resume. Non-conference RPI of 9. Two sub-100 losses, but they're both in the conference. They lose in the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament, and they lost to... And I'll pull that up right here. They lost to Baylor. Yeah, so they lost to Baylor in the quarterfinals, rather. They beat Baylor in the quarterfinals, and they lost to West Virginia. So getting by both of those teams is tough. But that's the exclamation point right there. You take down Baylor, a top 10 team, the number 9 team in the country, while a team like Syracuse is losing to Miami.
Yeah.
So I think absolutely Kansas State, you put them in. Now, here's the interesting part. TCU, new coach. Jamie Dixon, who coached at Pittsburgh from 2003 to 2016, played there in the 80s. Haven't made the tournament since 1998. They were atrocious for the last 15 years. RPI of 63. A strength of schedule, though, of 31. Three top 50 wins. Three sub-100 losses. 18-14, including 6-12 in their conference. I was just berating Clemson for going 6-12 in their conference. But you know what Clemson didn't just do?
They didn't just...
They didn't just beat the number one team in the country. They didn't just beat the number one team in the country. So, TCU beats Kansas.
Do they get in?
No. I can't see it. It would be crazy to put them in.
I was going to say...
They have so much resume than Syracuse.
As soon as you said TCU, though, my first thought was, how do they get in?
They can't. I would love to just... I would love to see them in... It can't happen. I'm sorry. Now,
but
if
they're going the right direction, though,
if the last four in are Syracuse, Wake Forest, TCU, and Kansas I will not be surprised because have we seen this from the selection committee before?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm going to get a text tomorrow night. They got it.
Oh, you're going to be watching it with me, probably.
Most likely.
You don't even know that yet.
No, but I take it seriously. Most likely.
Yeah, so. TCU, a great win. Not a great season. Great win.
Not a great season.
I think it's too little too late. But that being said.
Cliche.
Should I really be saying that beating the number one team is too little too late? I'm probably a bad person for saying that. But
no,
I think it's true.
We have to look at March Madness and the tournament times and how it works. I mean, these teams have all season long to prove themselves, and they don't have a great regular season, and then they get one spotty win. We've seen plenty of teams get that one spotty win where it's like, whoa, and everybody gets hyped up over it, and then it's just it fizzles out quick. I don't think TCU is going to do that, but I do think that it's a little too late.
So let me finish up here real quick. A little too late for TCU. I'll go over the teams here that you take a look at. In my bubble watch that are not going to get in, and I think you can make cases for them. Those teams are the following. Illinois should be out. They lost too early. They had a 10-13 record versus the RPI top 100. They finished at 18-14. Strength of schedule is 17, but that doesn't help them enough. They lost too early. They should be out. Iowa should also be out. They lost to Indiana. Indiana should also be out. They lost to Wisconsin, but they needed a lot of help. RPI is 76. Monmouth is ultimately going to be out. Like I said, they got saucered last year. They were 27-7 with an RPI of 55. Lost to Iona in the top, in the final game of the MAAC. This year they lose to Siena in the semifinals. Last year they had no top 50 wins. This year they had no top 50 wins. Last year they had three sub-100 losses. This year they have the same. They're going to miss the tournament last year. I was upset about that. Syracuse got their spot. Syracuse is probably going to get their spot again. I can't make a case for him because of what happened last year. Like I said, Paul, I would walk like a child. I bracketed like a child. I'm trying not to bracket like a child. Monmouth is out. Sorry, Monmouth. Win your conference. That's all I can say. Illinois State, I had them with a giant question mark, to be honest. I really don't know. Strength of schedule, 159. Their best win was against Wichita State because they're in their conference. RPI of 35, and getting a win against Illinois State was not a pushover this year. They were a good team to beat. Yeah. They only had two sub-100 losses, and they lost to Wichita State in the final. They were the number one seed the regular season of the Missouri Valley. That's a giant question mark. Can you put them over Syracuse? The committee will absolutely not do that. They won't put them over Syracuse or Kansas State or Wake Forest. They absolutely won't do it. Utah should be out. They lost in the quarterfinals of the Pac-12. Strength of schedule, 122 for a Power 5 team. That's a no-no. Georgia should be out. They had a strength of schedule of 12. Just one top 50 win, though. They lost in the quarterfinals. They should be out. California makes an interesting – and they're not even on the sheet. They're not even on the sheet for Joe Lunardi. California, though, and that's a team that I could maybe see coming in, squeaking themselves in, and making a case. RPI 53, strength of schedule of 36, 21-12, one top 50 win, but no sub-100 losses, no shooting themselves on the leg, a non-conference strength of schedule of 26, and this is the Pac-12, not necessarily a pushover conference. They lost in the semifinals, but they were able to make it there. I like them. I don't know if they're enough, but I like them. And then you have Alabama. They're the last team I want to mention here. You would not mention Alabama, a team that has not made the tournament since 2012. They're not usually a very good basketball team, and they're not really that good of a basketball team this year. But they just beat South Carolina, which happens to be a good basketball team this year.
Yes, it does.
So when you do that, you can go, huh, that's interesting. So like TCU, who unfortunately is already out and can't make me say that anymore, and like California, who is already out and can't make me say that anymore, Alabama is in the huh, that's interesting category.
Yeah.
And they get to face Kentucky. So, if they beat Kentucky, stay tuned for Alabama. If they don't, have a nice day, Alabama. We'll see you in the NIT. But, maybe. I don't know. But, if they beat Kentucky,
they can come in.
If they beat Kentucky and lose to Vanderbilt, follow my Twitter tomorrow. If they do that, very interesting. If that happens. So, in conclusion, you ask, what are my last four in? Because I really haven't written them down. Joe Lunardi's last four in is Syracuse, Wake Forest, Kansas State, and USC. And we didn't talk too much about USC. I would love to put California in. I don't know if I can. USC has a strength of schedule of 77. A non-conference strength of schedule of 148. But they're still in a very, very tough conference, and they have an RPI of 43, so I do see why they're so low on that list. I would like to say that Wake Forest, Kansas State, and USC are all in, and then I'd like to leave that last bubble spot, not Syracuse, open.
For Liberty.
For somebody else. Yeah, fan the Flames. I'd like to leave it open for somebody else. So that's where I'm going to go. Wake Forest, Kansas State, USC, and leaving that spot open, not because I don't want to see Syracuse in, but if somebody powers their way in, and it's not – TCU ran out of rope.
Yeah.
Alabama's probably going to run out of rope. Rhode Island, if they win today, they beat Davidson. That's not a resume-altering win. It's not. It isn't a resume-altering win. Illinois State just has to pray, I guess. I I don't know. Providence, Seton Hall, Marquette, and Xavier, all the last four byes. I think Xavier, Xavier beat Butler, so Xavier's definitely in. Marquette is a team that I think could be lower than that. I don't think they're as good as Joe Lunardi has them. They have a non-conference strength of schedule of 218. That begs the question, along with Providence, is how much does the Big East weigh? We didn't really get to talk about that, but how much does the Big East weigh? I did want to mention this. Last year, five Big East schools qualified. They had a 9-4 record, which was the best. Granted, they had the winner, and they had one Sweet 16 team out of those five, which was the winner, Villanova. ACC had six teams in the Sweet 16. In the Sweet 16, they had six teams. Big Ten, Big 12 had three teams. Pac-12, SEC, and the WCC, which is Gonzaga, had one, which was Gonzaga there. So ACC, or the AAC, went 1-4. And then the Big 12, Pac-12, Big 10, ACC all had seven teams, with the Pac-12 going 4-7. So remember that when you're doing your bracketology tomorrow.
That I'm going to have to bring over a bunch of, like, just blank brackets so you can teach me.
Oh, I will. I will, young Padawan.
He's like, I'm going to have the whiteboard up. Oh. We're going to go through it all.
No, it's been good. But so anyway, so the last four in, I don't know, can you make a last four in off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I do like USC. I want to say Wake Forest.
I think Wake Forest is, like I said, I stated all the cases.
I do like them. But ultimately, those are the only two that I think would make the most sense out of the other two that could be in. It's such a toss-up. We have to literally wait until the end of today and when the games wrap up to kind of really give it a good say, okay, this, and this.
Kansas State lost by a point to West Virginia. So I think they're in.
I mean, but West Virginia is ranked 11. Like, West Virginia is really good.
I might be arguing with voices in my head about Syracuse right now. I really might be. I don't know. Am I crazy? I don't know. I just don't see the case for them besides the fact that they beat up on a lot of top teams.
But see,
but they traded those wins for losses.
And I get it. The one thing that I wouldn't be opposed if they got in is because of the amount of, I would say, entertainment that Boeheim provides for the...
I think the reason they'll get in is because I think that they've worked hard. But I don't think that there's another team on the table right now that has enough rope in front of them to get a quality win that you can say, that's the team that's going to knock out Syracuse. Illinois State can't do it. California can't do it. Rhode Island can do it. But if they do it, they're going to make the tournament. They're going to get the automatic qualifier. A win against Davidson, 100% not. So I want to leave that spot open. I'll let you know. Follow me on Twitter, at MixMaster909. I'm going to be tweeting about all of this over the next couple of days.
I'm at Kyle Vi.
Make sure to find us on our podcast page, Average Joe Sports Show on Audio Boom. That's where all of this will be posted and much more. But we thank you very much for joining us here on this Saturday morning. Happy bracketing. And we'll see you back next time for another presentation for Kyle Vaught and Joe Mixey of the Average Joe's Sports Show.